Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Talking In Stations Midweek Update. This is Season 1, Episode 15. It is currently February 21st or 22nd, depending on your time zone. And joining me on the show today, of course, I am Artemis Albosa. We have our co-host, Ron USMC.
What's up, guys?
And we also have returning again co-host Silver Suspiria.
Hello, Whedon.
How was your week off last week, Silver?
Not great. I missed it because work was terrible.
Okay. And also joining us today, a special guest from Code, Jason Kujan.
Hello, everyone.
And we'll be talking a lot more with Jason about a wide variety of topics. Certainly some, what's the best term to describe these topics?
Pure evil?
Non-consensual?
Not the word I was looking for. Divisive was the word I was looking for. But
that's fair, yeah.
All right, well, we'll hop into that. But first, we got some news to cover. Not as much as previous weeks, mostly because, like, all the fights we've been talking about that have been happening, they're still there. People are still shooting at each other. It's just nothing new is happening. Nothing game-changing has occurred. So we're still keeping an eye on it. Everything is mostly the same as it was as far as the fighting in Pure Blind, the fighting in... fighting in Scalding Pass has changed. And let's jump right into that and start there. Scourge Dot has disbanded. Or rather, they have sort of merged into Skill Yourself for the most part. Scourge Dot was the Russian alliance who popped onto the scene, were extremely good at what they did. They flew usually like 50 to 60 man fleets, but punched well above their weight. We had their CEO as a guest on the Sunday show one week. And they were, frankly, one of my favorite alliances just because of the amount of stuff that they did. They're also great sources of content down in the Great Wildlands Scalding Pass area. They gobbled up a lot of Tri's old Sov, and then they disappeared. So does anybody have anything that they want to mention regarding Scourge's disbanding?
Well, not all of them left. I think a lot of them went into Skill U, and that's kind of what, you know, the CEO was talking about. There was a lot of action, and they were already friends with Skill U just from fighting alongside them. So I think some of them stayed in Scourge, and they're kind of doing their own thing, maybe Red Menace, you know. But I think it's a good move for them. You know, they're looking for more content. They're going to join a bigger group and have a little bit more fun.
I did one thing that I certainly picked up on in our interview with the CEO of Scourge was that he mentioned that when the Scourge first started, or at least early on in their life cycle, they were very, very good. But then more recently, like within the last few months, he said that they weren't as good as they used to be and that they were really living and surviving off the reputation and trying to get better again. So I'm wondering if this is sort of like there was a bunch of internal struggle going on with them trying to get good again. That just, they figured, you know what, it's better off if we go join another group and integrate with them. But we'll keep an eye on, interestingly enough, the one corporation when I heard that they disbanded that I was looking to find out where they went was Kexscale. It was the main corp is what I sort of thought of them as. It's where a lot of their PvPers were, a lot of the notable players, at least notable to me, were. But it seems like Kexscale has disbanded as well. So the majority of people left the corporation and have gone elsewhere. So it's kind of difficult to track where everybody went. Like, you literally have 150 players down to 10 from this one corporation. And these were all very good PvPers that I don't know where they went now. So it'll be interesting to see where all of these various people pop up in various groups. I guess that leads into our next news topic, which is that there might be a war starting in the south between the Russians and Fraternity. Ron, I think you have the most info on this one.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. You know, they talked about it on Sunday's show, but a lot of it was, you know, that test allowed them to stage out of Legion of Xdeath's area. And, you know, what I was saying is, you know, that test, you know, we aren't in the extinction business, right? Even though that was, you know, that's kind of a joke because the extinction war that we had, but, you know, so we have a vested interest in Xdeath doing well, and you know they're going to be joining the Red Menace, and you know they're going to be staging out of that and attacking Fraternity or something. And I'm not exactly sure, but I think it's interesting that almost timely that you know we talk to Scourge, and he's talking about that you know the Russian players need a focus for them to log in, for them to do something. So I think it's really funny that, you know, just a couple of weeks after we talked to them, they disband, some of them join Skill U, you know, and now the Red Menace is forming. And like, I think it's all great stuff, and it's like heating up in that area. It's a lot of fun.
We should also mention, as we discussed, was it 2 weeks ago, the sovereignty in Period Basis has completely transitioned over to Goonswarm. So this was previously the home, longtime home, of Red Menace Coalition, notably, or at least what was left of it, which was Midas 22, sort of a renter organization, and then Red Alliance, who had long-term ties with Goonswarm Federation. They've completely dropped all of their Sov in Period Basis, and so now they are Sovless, and we'll see. It looks like they are teaming up with XIX and going to go to war with Fraternity. If you want to hear some more about that, you can check out the Sunday show. Other interesting drums of war that are beating, we had a lot of propaganda going around because the initiative had a super capital move op, or at least a capital move op. Rumor has it that they are deploying up north near the Tenal Venal branch area. We've yet to actually see what their final ending place is going to be, but they've had some mishaps along the way. In particular, if I can find the battle report, some of their capitals on a secondary move-up got tackled and killed by Northern Coalition, Nullsetch, Naya, Sterlopen, and some other local groups. So that was rather unfortunate. And also, you have to remember that Initiative had their super capitals in the Cloud Ring and Fountain area, and so that presented a safety net, an umbrella for any Rorquals or super capitals ratting in that area. And so after that supercapital umbrella goes away, suddenly these Rorquals and supercapitals are no longer as safe as they used to be. And indeed, we've seen one Avatar and a Nyx from the Bastion go down already. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to Cloud Ring and Fountain now that the supercapital umbrella is at least severely diminished. And it'll also be interesting to see where the Initiative goes and who they target. All right, final thing on the news docket is Snuff is invading Mimitar Losec. I believe we mentioned this on a previous show. I think when they first moved down and they had initially deployed supers into Lantorn. But now they've actually started fighting, and the fighting has been rather fierce, like multiple 20 to 50 to 100 billion ISK fights every day worth of fighting down in Losec. Most of that, not because of the sheer number of players, but because within Losec, you have very expensive doctrines that are being used. And so each individual is putting a lot more ISK on the field than a normal, like, Ferox v. Ferox fight that we're seeing, like, in Highsec right now. They're putting on multiple billion ISK worth of Lashaks and Balgorns and things like that. But down here in the lower left-hand corner of Haimitar is the area where the majority of the fighting has been happening. We've got Shadow Cartel. What are the other groups that live there?
Did you say jump? Siege Green hangs around there.
Yeah, so all of those guys, they live generally in the Seed, Dal, and Lantern area. They've also got some other systems around in here. The cool little triangle shape that I quite like. And Snuffed Out has moved right smack in the middle of it. And the initial fighting, even though Snuffed moved their supers into the area, into Lantern, they didn't actually deploy them. So they took quite a few fights with just subcaps, usually Macarials, and then their capitals, and versus the other groups which were also in the area, all of whom generally don't like Snuff. Snuff didn't fare too well until they started dropping their super capitals. If I can find the right battle reports, which apparently I cannot in any case. Snuff lost a number of fights, and then today was the first time that they actually dropped their super capitals. It was on a Fortizar fight, and they just wiped the floor with the hostiles there. So we'll begin to see, now that Snuff are willing to drop their supers in the area, if Shadow Cartel and the local residents are able to do anything to counter it, or if it's just going to be another situation where groups move out, sort of like what happened up in Black Rise and Lone Track. What do you think?
Yeah, so? I think this is a little different, right? Because, you know, when they were in Black Rise down there, they had like some friends, right? They had Penn is out, which was a strong ally for them. And there wasn't as many groups, I think, in Black Rise. It had been diminishing for a while. Like, you know, like Templus Calisif had moved out. The Block had moved out. You know, a couple of groups had moved out. I think down here you're going to see a lot more groups and a lot more of them willing to fight Snuff. So it'd be interesting for them. I think it would be a new challenge. I don't know if any of these groups together can have an answer for that many supers, but be interested to see for sure.
One thing I am particularly curious about, and this is, could just be the result of my ignorance of the politics of the area, and that is the groups who are down there, Shadow Cartel, Siege Green, Diddy Say Jump, they've all been down there fighting each other. But I'm not sure if that's fighting each other because it's a territorial dispute or just they're looking for content and so they'll brawl each other to keep their members entertained, or if there is some sort of animosity between them. So I'm interested to see if they are effectively able to team up in order to match the numbers or the capital numbers that Snuffed Out can bring to bear, or if we're going to see some infighting or other barriers which would prevent them from effectively defending their space together.
I think my impression is that they'll find a way to work together. I mean, Snuff is a big enough threat that they're going to have to, really.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eye on that, and we'll keep you guys informed. Certainly some, hopefully at least, some large kill battle reports to be looked at in the future. But now let's dig into the meat of today's show, something that I am excited about, something that Ron is terrified of, and something that Jason is very familiar with, HiSec ganking. So for those who are unfamiliar, the situation in HiSec is pretty straightforward with a couple of edge cases that get pretty crazy. You have Concord, which enforces the rules of high security space, which means that you cannot engage with somebody else unless they consent to it in some form or another. They have to either break the law, which makes them able to be shot at, or they have to be declared warred against. In other words, you bribe Concord to look the other way, or a couple of other cases. But Concord has a response time, and that response time goes up. In other words, it takes longer for Concord to intervene, the lower the security of space that you're in. So in a 1.0 system, Concord reacts very, very quickly. But in a 0.5 system, Concord doesn't react all that quickly. And this provides some leeway for would-be griefers, would-be profiteers, whatever you would like to call them, to have some fun, let's say. So, Jason, can you quickly describe for us what is the majority of the gameplay surrounding HiSec ganking that you're involved with?
So your typical gank is just a bunch of dudes flying essentially glass cannon ships, you know, things like Alpha Tornadoes or Blaster Catalyst, Blaster Talos. We also use stealth bombers. And you basically just take as many of these ships as you need, and you go into preferably one of the lower sec systems. As you were saying, it gives us a little bit more time in the 0.5s and the 0.6s. And we just find a target that we think we can kill, that we think is worth it. Maybe it's just a valuable hull that we want on our kill boards. And we're going to warp ourselves onto that target. And from the time we get shooting, we have in a 0.5 about 24 seconds to kill that target before Concord stops us. And all of your HiSec ganks is just a simple game of math of, do you have enough DPS to get it dead in those 24 seconds?
That's interesting. 24 seconds, way longer than I thought, even in a 0.5.
That's in a prep 0.5, by the way. There is a difference between systems that have Concord already present in the system. You actually get more time. As counterintuitive as that sounds, if there's Concord already present in the system, you will get an extra, I think it's about 6 seconds. And then if Concord is not there, you actually get a little bit shorter time.
Is that because they warp from wherever they are?
It's because CCP develops this game, and sometimes logic just doesn't really come into play.
Talk to me about prepping, though. What do you mean by prepping the system?
So the way that Concord works, as I was saying, the first time you gank in a sys, Concord is not present. For whatever reason, CCP designed it so that they respond a little bit faster if they are not in the system. once you gank and Concord is present in the system, it's going to sit around wherever it responded to. It spawns, I think, 15 or 16 kilometers off of whatever its target ship is. And there is one set of Concord for each ship that's criminal at that time. So if we gank with 10 people, we're going to have 10 different spawns of Concord on that location where we killed our target, hopefully killed our target. And then because Concord is now in the system, we want them to stay here because we will actually get that extra 6 seconds. So we're going to go and we're going to take our pods to the nearest station. We're going to jump in rookie ships and we're going to go ahead and we're going to undock from that station. And the way the mechanics are, Concord is going to pull any Concord that is currently in the system first before spawning new sets of Concord. So if we pull with all 10 pods, we're going to pull all of that Concord from that gank location, which is typically on a gate or an asteroid belt, and it's going to come to the station where we don't really care because our next target is not going to be on that station. And we leave it there, we go back to our home, we get a new ships, and we wait out our timer, and then we're ready to gank again, and the next time we'll actually have an extra 6 seconds because Concord's already present, although not on the same grid.
How long does Concord stay in the system after you pulled them away or
it
whatever?
It resets at downtime.
Oh,
really?
So those Concord ships will sit in that system until downtime?
Yes, there are tricks to the trade for removing Concord from system because of the way that they warp within the system. If your ship is destroyed while they're still in warp to you, essentially, then they stop responding and it effectively despawns them because they're still in that warp tunnel and they just never spawn at the other end. So there's a couple ways to do that. But for the most part, you're trying to move them somewhere else and you want them in the system so you don't really despawn very frequently. It actually is more problematic thing when you die to gate guns too fast and now you have to go and bring another spawn in because you want that extra 6 seconds for your next one and you just despawned it on accident.
What are you attacking that 6 seconds will mean, you know, is crucial? Is it like, you know, armored plated jump raiders or?
Well, I mean, it's all a math game. So if I'm shooting a target, even if I'm using, you know, Atrons that get all of like PPS, it's still an extra 2 or 3 shots with an Atron. With the Catalyst, I think they're like 1.5 second volley time. So you're talking about an additional 4 volleys there. Stealth bombers are 5-point-something second volley. So you get an extra volley. The bombers, same thing with Talos, they're around the same. I think you actually end up getting 2 extra volleys for that 6 seconds. So it's all specific to whatever sec the system is because you're trying to just make it so you can barely squeeze in that last volley. And sometimes you're a second off, sometimes you have an extra half of a second to work with. But the whole game with Concord is just trying to get in those last extra volley or two, because when you're talking about a fleet of say 20 Catalysts that are doing, you know, I think it's like 8 or 1,000 or 1,200 damage per volley, you know, multiply that by 20 and it's a significant amount of damage that you're going to miss out on if Concord is not prepped.
And it's important that the reason that you're trying to optimize for it, you just barely squeaking in that kill before Concord intervenes, is because no matter what, all of the ships that you're using to gank, they're dead. There's no way you can avoid Concord. And if you try, you're going to get permabanned. So everything that you put on field in order to try and execute a gank will die. That's why we see the cheap ships, T1 ships, max DPS per ship, so that you're getting the most out of every ship you put on field, because it's dead. It's gone, no matter what. And that brings me to my next question, which is your motivation for doing this. And you briefly touched on it in your introduction. Is the majority of what you do it for profit? So you try and scout for ships that will drop enough in loot to pay for your fleet and then some?
Well, that definitely varies from person to person, whoever's doing it. When I first started ganking, it was more of a fun thing. A lot of the people who go out and gank the miners and, you know, just random stuff that's floating in asteroid belts, they're more doing it for the fun. There is no real ISK in ganking miners. All the value is in that hole and it's not going to drop. You know, you'll get a couple mil from the mods that are on it, but for the most part, even if you kill it with one Catalyst, you're losing money. So they're mostly doing it either for the thrill of the kill or to pump up their killboard stats. Then you have other gankers who are in fact doing it for profit. And I actually did ganking for a profit for quite a while. And normally the targets for profit ganking are very different. You want to go after something that's going to have a lot of droppable loot. Typically, that's going to be your Tech 1 and Tech 2 industrials, your freighters, your jump freighters, because their hull might only be worth, you know, it's something right under a billion isk for a freighter, but they could have an infinite amount of value in the cargo, and all that cargo is 50-50 chance of it dropping. So you definitely have these different groups. Some people are looking for profit, other people are not. I've kind of evolved, and as I've accumulated enough wealth, a lot more of my ganking is I'll take the profitable ones when they come. But if I see a billionist kill mail out there, I'm not going to let it just walk on through. You know, pretty much any jump freighter that comes into Udama, if I have enough DPS, it will die. If there is a marauder that comes into Udama, if I have enough DPS, it will die. And I'm probably the only one that's in a position where I sit there all day and I'm looking for both profitable ganks and unprofitable ganks. There aren't very many gankers in my position where they're financially stable. A lot of them do it for profit if they're looking at industrials, or they're doing the lower end ganking, which is the miners, where, you know, a Tech 2 catalyst is only 10 or 12 million depending on the market, and that's much more affordable for somebody who's just doing it as a fun activity.
And you can't do this with alphas, right? These all have to be omegas.
Well, you can do it. You're just restricted to only one alpha. So if you're going to do it with alphas, typically you want to have either a friend that's scouting for you, or you're literally just warping your catalyst belt to belt and hoping that there's something there that's asleep and lets you get on it at zero so you can then kill it. But being an alpha doesn't actually stop you from shooting anyone.
So I was watching your stream last week, and you said something that really surprised me. And that was when you were talking about freighters, right? So your typical way that you get on a freighter is you'll bump him away. So, you know, the freighter is, if he's autopiloting, of course, he's too far away from the gate, and that's pretty easy, right? But if they're aligning and you bump them away from their warp or whatever, so that is one thing, right? So being able to bump someone and off of their warp path and then being able to gank them. But then what I didn't like to hear was that you were also talking about ways to be able to gank freighters that were webbing as well. Like, and that is really quick. So, you know, is there really sort of any safe way? Like, if I want to take my freighter through Udema, where you're hanging out, where the Kushin special team is, like, is there any way that I can, like, avoid without having to see if you're online?
Absolutely. If you got something that needs to be somewhere, there are these great guys over at PushX and Red Frog, and they will take care of all that risk for you for a small fee. If you insist that you have to move it yourself and you're going to, you know, save that extra 8 million ISK and risk your multi-billion ISK freighter to save that little bit of ISK, you can mitigate risk. You can have that Webber. It does make it a lot more difficult. You can wrap your packages so that I can't actually see what you're carrying. All I'll see is that plastic wrap. But if you really want to be 100% safe, you either want to use smaller ships and just do multiple trips. It's much harder for me to catch DSTs. It's almost impossible for me to catch blockade runners. Jump freighters have this wonderful thing where they can just teleport themselves out of the system before I can even touch them. It's a really fair mechanic, by the way. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you're going to just roll into Udama with expanders on and just hope that I'm not there, yeah, you're probably going to end up having a bad day somewhere along the line.
Like, I was going to say, if you're a jump freighter and I jump in and like, oh my God, there are all his catalysts and I have an emergency out Sino, do I have enough time? It looks like I would have enough time to light and jump. Do you have ships that point? I mean, Concord's still responding. Like,
I'll have plenty ships there. But actually, the way the mechanic works is you can jump on that tick that you decloak from your from your whatever it is, the gate cloak that you get. So it takes me at least one tick to lock you. You should be already out of system before I can even put the scram on you. So it actually is, if you are, you know, on the button with it, you can get out and I cannot tackle you in a jump freighter. But you have to be good at it, and you get that one tick, that's it.
It's exactly like insta-warp works with interceptors. So if you can warp within the 2 seconds, you're cool. If you can use the right-click menu to jump out within the 2 seconds of your decloaking, you're cool.
And that's why people do it on the decloak from the gate, because you can have that menu up and running, and you just watch the timer in the top left go down, and once you hit zero, you just hit the button.
Right, right.
One question I always see, people asking is, you've kind of already answered this, but is there, you know, an ISK amount that says for you to gank or not gank? And you kind of answered it, you know, but I would say that the 80 to 90% case where you're not just sitting there bored and you got dressed up and you're ready to party, so you're just going to kill something. So not that case, but, you know, is there that sort of, you know, ISK value that you'll say, it's not worth my time?
Well, there's almost always an ISK number. Unfortunately, sometimes that number is zero, but everybody's kind of got a number in their mind. Some people, it changes on the day. For me, if I'm looking for profitable freighters, there's a lot of different variables that kind of change my decision-making if I'm going to go for just fun ganks, anything that I can kill. There are certain situations where I have to use more expensive ships, so I'm going to be looking for a bigger number. You know, maybe I'll throw Tech 1 Catalyst at a freighter all day, because 20 Tech 1 Catalyst, I can solo expanded jump freighters, and 20 Tech 1 Catalyst is all of like 50 mil for me or something like that. So like for me, that's a no-brainer. I'll throw 50 mil at a billionist kill mill any day. But once you start getting tankier and I have to use bigger ships, or maybe you have a fleet of people supporting you that are going to lodge you, I have to bring more ships, then that number keeps steadily going up. So there's no like one catch-all number that will handle you in all situations. Generally, if you're under a bill, I'm mostly killing you because I want to kill you, not because of the stuff you're carrying. Once you start going over a bill, then it's very rare that there's a situation where you're not going to be profitable for me to kill. And that's when, you know, once you start going over 2 bill especially, I can pretty much throw anything at you and I'm going to have a profitable gank, and you probably can't tank enough to stop 20 Talos if you're in a regular freighter.
Yeah, that's interesting, because, you know, I've seen your ship scan on one side, and then you already know what modules, and in your mind, you already know you have those numbers, you know. Well, you know, 3 armor rigs on the bottom, I already know that I can handle this with 12, so I can easily do this and then catch them on the other side. So that makes it, that's kind of interesting, right? Because it's about the amount of effort, right? And, you know, that sort of thing. But is there there's no freighter fitting that will avoid the Cushion special team, right? Is there a, you know, like a Marauder fit that will avoid the special team?
Certainly. I've had Marauders tank through my entire fleet, and I just fail gank many times. I can't.
So what is that fit? I'm just asking for a friend. Let me get it. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm pretty sure it's actually just one of the like insane like double extra large boosters or something like that, where I just simply can't put out enough DPS to really start getting away at armor and structure. I'm just always in shield. But for the freighters, actually, if you're in a jump freighter, there are fits where you are tanky enough to survive me. Arcs and Anchars in particular are ridiculous. Arcs are really bad. You can get over 1 million EHP on those with plates and slaves, and I can't do anything about that. I have to watch you as you coast on through. The nicer thing about arcs is actually that with those plates, you're not even reducing your cargo hold. So you're dramatically increasing your HP numbers, your EHP, but you're not actually taking a cargo loss for it. Good game balance there. But so definitely with the bulkheads and expanders, you at least normally have that trade-off. And that's really for the Tech 1 freighters. you don't really use plates. You're going to do either bulkheads or expanders, and you have to take that trade of, I'm going to carry less cargo, but I'm going to have a greater chance of getting through. I'm going to have more EHP. He can't kill me.
For those unfamiliar, when CCP initially, ganking was one of those emergent gameplay aspects which CCP did not intend, but it sort of sprang up initially as a griefing tactic, and then it morphed into what it is today, which seems to very much be a little bit of the griefing, a little bit of the roleplay. Most of that is done with code and showcased on minorbumping.com. But CCP didn't balance it for a very long time. They just said, yeah, we know it's a thing, whatever. It's a sandbox game, deal with it. A HTFU, whatever. But when CCP did a balance pass on freighters, so freighters, you used to be able to fit nothing, and then they said, well, we want to balance ganking, so let's give them rigs. And then the community was outraged over that, and so they said, okay, we'll give them low slots and some very stringent fitting restrictions. And so the way CCP made it so that we could have the trade-off, which Jason is talking about, is they changed the bonuses on bulkheads such that you align slower and you lose cargo hold, but you gain tank. And then on the expanders, you gain, You gain cargo, you lose speed, and you lose tank. So that is the trade-off at CCP's attempt to balance the amount of hauling you can do in high sec, the safety that you have while you do it, and how effective and profitable ganking is.
There's actually a list that I have of like a dozen different nerfs that they've done to ganking. And I don't think that they were, I think when they designed the game, I think they understood that it was something that could happen. Maybe not so much emergent gameplay, but I don't think they realized the scale at which high sec ganking could and would eventually happen. Because even pre-2012, high sec ganking wasn't that big. There weren't that many career high sec gankers. And it's in 2012 when you had the first Brangida, Code.Alliance formed, Minilove, the high sec ganking sig of Goon Swarm formed. And that's when you really started to see it kind of come into the maturity of the ganking community that is now, where you have tons of career gankers, you have sigs dedicated just to ganking freighters, you have Goon Swarm targeting strategic jump freighters and freighters in high sec. And it's really kind of gotten to the point where it's actually something that they need to consider and they need to balance against. If you want, I can run through a number of these nerfs that they gave us, but
yeah, give me a couple. I'd like to hear a couple, like your top one or two.
Well, the top one or two, actually, ganking used to be really, really imbalanced. Okay, back in the day, in the earliest years of Eve, Concord actually didn't have god mods. Essentially, it didn't have guns that could two-shot you. It didn't have warp core or warp scrambles that had infinite point, didn't have infinite newts. It didn't have the ability to stop you from warping. So what you could do is you could undock in your tornado and go from mining belt to mining belt to mining belt and just alpha procure, warp to the next mining belt, alpha another skiff, warp to the next one, kill the Mackinaw there, go to the next one, kill the Hulk. And once you finally exterminated everything in the system, then you'd sit there, let Concord kill you, wait your 15 minutes and go to the next one. Also used to get insurance on your ships. You no longer get insurance. If your ship dies and Concord's on the last mail, you're not going to get paid out your insurance, but you also used to get insurance. So those tornadoes that today might cost 80 mil, you know, you're getting 50 or 60 mil back in insurance. It's incredibly cheap. And you were chaining these kills, you know, killing all the miners in the system. You weren't just getting one kill. So like it used to be really imbalanced back then. But then they also increased the Concord response time at some point. That was pre-2012, before my years, essentially. Then they changed the loot can aggression mechanic so that you would go suspect if you started pulling out of these wrecks that you had just created. You used to be able to loot them for free with an alt. Anybody could.
Dude, I hated that. Like, those loot can mechanics, man, like when I would run high sec stuff, you know, people would roll around and steal loot. And then, you know, if you attack them, then you would get flagged, and then they would just dock up and undock in a T3 and just kill you.
Absolutely.
Ugh, hated that stuff, man.
And in a way, it kind of helped us, because now as like a third-party bystander that just happens to see a gank go off, you're less likely to go over there and try and steal out of the wreck because you know you'll go suspect. So that helps us a little bit. But when we could loot for free, like, things were way easier then. They had to... nerf it again, because what we started doing was we would, you know, let's say we killed a freighter, we'd put our freighter on the wreck and we'd tell it to warp. And then right as it's about to hit warp, we would go ahead and leave the can. And so, or actually, we would wait until it hit warp. And while it was in warp, because freighters are so slow, those first couple of ticks, you're still in range of the wreck, you could pull out of the wreck while you were in warp, and you're invincible. You know, you warp to a station, you dock up immediately. There was no way for someone to catch you. So they had to nerf that as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, God forbid they nerf something like that, you know.
Yeah.
No, I'm being sarcastic.
And this was all before
the tractor beams. Like, what about the tractor units? Like, I see when people are ganking, like, there'll be a couple of tractor units dropped. You can't attack those without getting flagged, right?
You'll get flagged, but the tractors also cannot pull yellow wrecks. They can only pull blue or white wrecks. So those are mostly people, either us pulling our own blue loot, or it's other scavengers, you know, trying to steal our blue loot. But it's not going to affect the actual wreck that we're very interested in. But after all of those, that's when they finally came in and said, okay, freighters are starting to die a lot. That's when they did the low slots. They added the low slots to freighters. And there was some give and take with that. It was a nerf because now they could put bulkheads on and, you know, triple their EHP. But because ganking was only just starting to really get going, a lot of them used their big brains and put the expanders on and just carried more. So we were fine with it. After that, we had the bowheads introduced, and they had learned from their lessons with freighters, okay, we got to give more. And they gave bowheads this stupid EHP number because they get low slots, and they get mid slots, and they get rigs. So you can get some insane numbers. They're gankable. If I throw 20 Talus at a max bowhead, it's going to die. But for a ship that, because it's carrying other ships, you don't know what those ships are fit with, and it has all this EHP, it was just one of these things where it came into the game, and as soon as people knew to fit it with tank, because there is no benefit to fitting it with expanders, it's just one of these things where it was introduced and there was no trade-off being made. Of course you're going to tank it. So every bowhead you see, 90% of the bowheads you see are max bulkhead fit, and they're really hard to kill. They're over 500,000 EHP. Beyond that, there were more nerfs to security status when you ratted. A lot of people would rat to get their security status up. They nerfed that so that they're smaller ticks and you had to actually be the one killing the rats. You couldn't just be in fleet with them. So you had a lot more negative 10 gankers come out of that. You couldn't just pause sec gank and Jita with NATOs as much. They changed the safe log-off mechanics some. We had some instances in the earlier years of GMs teleporting freighters that we were bumping, that we were setting up to kill. You know, I mean, they're never going to admit to that, but when a freighter just magically disappears, it's one of two things. It's either desync or it's the GMs moving it. And once we got really good at managing desync and knowing when desync was occurring and what caused it, it became obvious that, like, there's another force happening here.
So if you started bumping me, couldn't I just safe log? Like, couldn't I just leave?
And then your ship's there for 60 seconds because we've got you locked. You can't safe log. You can just close client. But we're just going to shoot you with our throwaway ship, and then you have a 15-minute timer, and we'll put you in dead space, and that's actually quite preferable because now you're off of grid. No one's going to mess with our gank, and we can just drop on you. You're at zero speed. We'll get a perfect warp in, and if you stay logged off, it's quite fantastic for us.
Well, talk to me about that mechanic, because there's been a lot of debate over bumping. Where do you think that is in the fairness scale? Like, because there are people that will just bump your freighter and have no intention to gank you or have no intention to do anything, but they're just sitting there in the Mercurial and just bumping you for hours. Do you think that needs work or looked at in any way? Is that something that needs to be changed, in your opinion, from your perspective?
The bumping is a little bit overpowered because of could do with it. But if you sit there and you bump someone for 12 hours on end, which has happened, by the way, you just file a ticket for harassment and the GMs are going to be on your side. Like, it's an unwelcome interruption for sure, but they're only going to do it for so long before they let you go and they say, you know, this guy's not paying me or he's not killable. Let's go find the next mark. There aren't really, you know, it's this boogeyman that's sitting there bumping people for 10 hours straight that people are thinking of when they say that bumping is, you know, overpowered. But in reality, nobody's doing that. You get interrupted for maybe 45 minutes at most if you do something to really irritate me. You know, if you start mouthing off in chat, I'm going to bump you even if I can't kill you, and I'm going to keep you there as long as possible.
But so, that transition to the next thing I wanted to talk to you about. So the tiers. Let's talk about the tiers for a little bit, right? So somebody comes in the system, sees you there, and says, and knows who you are maybe, and starts spouting a logo, pisses you off. So you decide, well, I'm gonna bump them. How much of this stuff must rage? Like, you're saying if you bump me for 12 hours, I can file a ticket. What is that limit? So part of ganking and gaming of the Concord response and stuff, how much is that skirting the line of EULA? You know, like, how do you know, all right, I better let this guy go or I'm going to get in trouble, or this mechanic is probably on the verge of exploit. Like, you must have been, you know, engaged by devs. I don't want you to speak specifically about conversations, but does that go through your mind too? Like, how far can I push this before I'm like breaking EULA?
I mean, it's something that we have to consider, but I don't bump for fun. I hate bumping. I will do as little bumping as possible. You have to earn it for me to bump you. There are a couple guys who that's what they do, and that's their income is, you know, ransoming freighters and bumping them until they pay. For those guys, I don't know what their limit is. They're kind of the same as me, though. If you irritate them enough, they will bump you for a few hours, and they will make sure that you don't enjoy the rest of your day. But as far as like getting close to the EULA, typically we're pretty well behaved. I've actually had a lot more hateful mails come my way just because I killed someone and a lot of things that definitely got these people permabanned than I've ever seen go the other way around where we're trying to instigate something.
Yeah, and that's what I'm sort of trying to get to. Like, a lot of people will follow their rage with you with a ticket to CCP. Like, oh, this guy must have done something to prevent Concord from coming. And you know, I know for a fact that he, you know, preps the system, whatever that means. All that is legal gameplay, right?
Yeah. The devs have definitely talked with us before, or the GMs, not the devs. The GMs have definitely told us before, like, you know, you can't, they've actually changed their ruling. When they first came out with that Concord ruling, it was you can't delay Concord, period. Well, they've changed it now, so it reads that you can't delay Concord for a significant period of time, because they've kind of accepted that Concord as a mechanic in general is just very spontaneous. We have some estimates on about how much time we get in a system, but there's a good couple seconds leeway depending on a number of different system factors, mainly the load on that server node. So we've actually had a situation come up in the past where there was a gank that happened. We killed some nomad, and everybody on that gank got banned for 30 days. And when we petitioned it, we found out that they said that we delayed Concord. This was before they changed the ruling. And they said that we delayed Concord, and everyone looked at the kill mail. All the DPS numbers look correct for the ships that we were in. Nothing on the kill mail itself indicates that there was any delay of Concord. So if there was a delay of Concord, it certainly didn't change the outcome.
But yeah,
they basically gave us the cold shoulder and said, no, there was delay and you're going to eat your 30 days and that's it.
Yeah, I think that's an important point for gankers and for yourself. Like, you've mapped this out, right? This is planning. This is knowing what you're doing, right? So you had enough DPS to kill that ship, whether Concord showed up on time or 3 hours late, right? He would have died anyway. And I also like that you made the point that the ruling was changed, because I see so many people come to me and be like, he can't delay Concord. That's against the EULA. Well, you got to read the EULA again, because it's not exactly what it says, right? And you're using clever game mechanic to buy yourself that extra couple of seconds. So I think people have this impression that what you're doing is way overpowered and that you're somehow skirting EULA and stuff. But that's not the case at all, in my opinion. It may be unfortunate and annoying for us to get caught, but I just want to make sure that people are clear that
you're
not breaking rules.
I think it's very different now than it was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, it wasn't a ton of effort, but you know, when you see you know, Jason do it with, you know, 24 accounts, you know, and not input broadcasting, but actually clicking through each one of them and doing it. Me personally, you know, I've always hated ganking, but now it's gotten to such a level that it really requires effort and it requires amount of skill that I feel personally that it's on par with where it should be, right? Which is, you know, if you want to gank something, you either need 100 friends, or if you're going to do it alone, you need a lot of skill and a lot of setup and, you know, a lot of these things. So, but, you know, that's my opinion on it. Like, I used to hate it intensely, but now it's kind of legitimate, you know?
I think so. And, you know, I think it's a little bit of balance. So my last question I wanted to talk to you about was, how's your mercenary business? Because this is a good way to interdict your enemies. And you seem like the kind of person that I'd want to hire to interdict some of my enemies. You get a lot of that, I imagine you do.
I've definitely had a number of people ask me, you know, hey, there's this guy that's mining in the system. Can you kill him for me? I'll pay you whatever it takes. And I mean, I've never done it. It's so much effort to try and move 24 accounts to some offense system, and then it's even worse to get there and then your target docks up, or the guy who's giving you intel doesn't mention that, oh, by the way, the Orca actually has a damage control and bulkheads and a whole bunch of Ospreys sitting around him. You're not going to be able to kill him. Like, there's so many factors that it's really hard to find a target like that I can actually kill, that I can kill for a price that someone would be willing to pay, and then also have a margin on top of that is worth it for me to haul my entire setup across New Eden to go get one kill and then come on all the way back to Udama.
Wow, I'm shocked. I really thought that'd be a huge mercenary business. Like, I'm surprised to hear that. But also goes to show you how much setup there is in this stuff.
I mean, I'm lazy too, so.
Yeah, but this got to be a lot of this. There are people out there who'd pay a lot of money for you to kill some high-sec miners or even interdict a freighter. Like, maybe I have some intel on this guy who runs a daily route or something and I don't like him, you know?
Sure. And I mean, it could happen. Maybe there's another multiboxer out there, because there are a couple of multiboxing gankers. Maybe somebody else will do it, but I personally, it's really hard for me to find a spot willing to go out of my way to kill somebody else for just ISK, because ISK isn't really an issue for me.
You know, speaking of ganking on a large scale, you know, to kind of transition a little bit, what do you think about, like, the Burn Jita event?
I think Burn Jita is great. It's actually the first Burn Jita. I think that's what really spawned Code.Alliance as well as Minilove. So without Burn Jita, I don't know if ganking would be anywhere near as prevalent as it is today in EVE. So historically, it definitely has had its impact on the game. I personally love Burn Jita. I participate in every year, and I probably play way more that weekend than I ever should. I don't think everybody appreciates the amount of effort and planning that goes into setting up a Burn Jita. The thousands and thousands of ships that not only have to be built and moved to the right place and then fit. I mean, last Burn Jita, the Burn Jita that I was involved with some of the logistics, we legitimately sat there with a couple of dudes fitting ships for hours on end, and we were causing tie-dye in Jita just from fitting.
Well, and then giving those ships out. And, you know, several hundred pilots get blown up. Redock, how do you distribute those ships? You just have, like, a bunch of people trading them, or, like...
Exactly. It's just a command setup where, you know, squad commanders are trading their wing commanders. Wing commanders are trading whoever the designated guy is for that fleet. And it's not just one fleet of 250 dudes. It's two, sometimes three fleets on those weekends that you're trying to feed. So the amount of support characters that are bumping, that are scouting, the FCs running, you know, what is it, 3 days in a row, 24/7. Running multiple fleets, there's a lot of people who are stepping up to fill that role, to make sure that the fleets are running and that every 15 minutes we're getting a kill. And the line members, all they have to do is, you know, jump clone to Jita and press F1. So there's a lot behind it, and it's months of planning, it's months of getting all the supplies together and making sure that all of the support personnel are going to be there and that everybody can have that weekend. We've had to schedule around just some of our top guys. If they're busy with work that weekend, we can't do Burn Gita that weekend. We'll have to move it back.
Yeah. I've
what about those poor impressed. Freighters? Those poor innocent freighters. They'll just trying one. To get those little T1 mods, you know?
You know, the first Burn Gitas were maybe more of a secret, but at this point, if you're hauling during Burn Gita, you're doing something wrong. Like, it's not our fault that you died to this 250-man fleet that's in system with you that you decide to undock with. Like, it's definitely on the victim's side at that point.
Is Burn Gita profitable at all, or is it just a massive publicity thing? Like,
it's definitely profitable. Really? I can't give you the numbers on how much loot we've pulled in, but it's very hard not to gank profitably when you've
even
got
in a
250-man fleet. Yeah, because
you just use
the
cheaper ships, aren't you?
Exactly. We're using the cheap ships. It's T1 coercers, T1 catalysts. They cost all of like 1.5 mil, 2 mil each. And for the less tanky targets, you're only throwing maybe 100, 120 at these guys. So when you think about your average freighter probably has somewhere between 800 mil and a billion ISK, it's really hard to not be profitable, even after people trying to steal loot. I will say that for Burn Gita, it's not set up to be profitable. It really is set up to be a source of content, not only for the Imperium, but for anyone who wants to join. Burn Gitas have always been open to anyone who can manage to get their way into comms or in contact with someone who can get them in. And it also creates this buzz for all of New Eden, even if you're not the one shooting ships. And the profit really has just been on the side. There are people who are running support to help pull the loot in, but it's definitely not the primary focus. There are plenty of wrecks that go unlooted just because there's too many of them.
Really interesting.
I do have one sort of tangent, and that is ganking on a smaller scale. So you multi-box, you do 10, 20 accounts at a time. We've talked about fleets of up to 200 catalysts, things like that, of just ganking high-value targets or ganking as a fun activity in Burn Gita. But there are a lot of people who just sit with a NATO or like a Sentry Vexer on a gate and look for T1 haulers or look for blockade runners and gank those. Or you have the NATOs who sit outside the Gita undock. Is that anything you have experience with or can speak to?
That's how I started when I was looking for profitable ganking in the early days. It's really easy and really profitable to sit on a gate with a Vexer and just shoot Tech 1 Industrials because there's plenty of them that stuff themselves with a couple hundred mil in them. And there will never be a shortage of those until this game goes dark. Same thing with people undocking from Gita with things that they shouldn't. How many times have you seen a shuttle in Gita die come up on the Z-Kill page and it's got 30 skill injectors in it? You know, it's something that happens almost on a weekly basis still. And that's only the ones that are over 10 bill that everybody sees. There's plenty more where they're carrying a bill, 2 bill, Tech 1 Industrials that are, you know, just starting to ramp up their production and they undock from Gita for the first time and they don't even realize that they're a target for that tornado that they've been staring at ever since they started this game and ever since they started undocking from Gita. You know, everybody's got to learn at some point, and there will always be a supply of Tech 1 Industrials and other smaller things that you can just solo with a Vexer or a Tornado or a Talos.
Okay. Those poor little T1 Industrials. Those poor little T1 Industrials with their 200 million in loot.
They're just so innocent.
Yeah.
They're so innocent.
I probably feel for them the most because that was me when I started this game. When I started playing in early 2014, I first fell in love with the industrial side of EVE. I didn't go right into the PvP. I had no interest in the PvP. It was really first mining, and then what really got me going was the industry. And I did lots of Tech 1 production. You know, I can't tell you how many billions I made in just Tech 1 production, which looking back has like the worst margins ever. And I can't believe that I spent so much time on it. But there I was, and every day undocking my Iteron 5 or whatever it is, fully expanded, with 1 or 2 bill in cargo, and I can't believe that I never got ganked that way. I actually never got ganked until I got to the point that I was in a freighter, and I actually got ganked by the legend War Akini, who was one of the original multi-boxers that started Mini Love. And I was actually hauling for Push X at the time, and he caught me with 5 or 6 bill right in Jita, off the undock. You know, I'm staring at the station. It's a couple hundred kilometers off. And that's what really inspired me to go into ganking, because it's probably my worst day as an industrialist, sitting there losing my freighter plus all that cargo. But there was something awe-inspiring of just, you know, maybe a dozen and a half Talos landing on me, all of them deploy their drones, they all lock you up, and then 10 seconds later, you're gone.
So the devil was in the swimming pool and saying, come on in, the water's warm, Jason. Just organize a special team.
It's hard to resist that.
If anyone has heard that story or heard the stuff that we've talked about and they're looking to get into ganking themselves, I know we've mentioned Code is the well-known high-sec ganking group. Mini Love is part of the Imperium. I know Pandemic Horde has a ganking squad thing that they have as well. Are there any other ganking groups that you know of?
It's definitely, by and large, just Mini Love and Code.doit, at least on a regular basis. I think some other NullSec entities like Horde have tried to do it, and the Horde one was actually led by Globby, and he's kind of retired from the game at this point. He's lost a lot of his interest in the game. But nobody has an operating group or organization looking at high-sec ganking other than those two, Code and Mini Love. Occasionally, you'll see like a random fleet pop up. I think last week, PLA did a couple of them. So it remains to be seen if that's going to be a regular thing. But Code and Mini Love are the two to join. Mini Love, you got to be in Goons Forum, and there's a whole bunch of other requirements to join them. But to be in Code.doit, it's pretty much you just got to go out there, start getting kills on your own, and someone will either approach you or you can hang out in our minor bumping channel. That's the in-game channel, minor bumping, and someone will recruit you out of there, or you can ask to join NOL, which is our starter corp, New Order Logistics. And I mean, you don't even have to be a part of one of these organizations to get into the ganking if that's what you're looking to do. It only takes a little bit of SP to hop in a catalyst and start bouncing between mining belts and get your first kills that way. It takes even just a little bit more, and you can sit in those Vexers or those NATOs. And I mean, they're inexpensive ships. You can do whatever else you want. And then just on the weekend, take a couple NATOs to Jita and just pop some randoms off the undock. It's very easy to get into if that's what you want to do or if that's what you want to try.
I do have one question regarding ganking for profit. And that is, when you have the big fleets where it's multiple people in fleet, or where like these groups, these NullSec entities or whatever, go out and they gank. Or no, more specifically Code, when you guys have fleet ganks, right? Not just you or another multi-boxer who are ganking for profit. How does the wealth distribution happen? Like, do you pay out to fleet members? What's the deal there?
Generally speaking, as far as Code.doit fleets are concerned, it's the FC is bringing in the ships. He's going to provide you with a ship. All you have to do is bring your pod over to Udama. You'll get a ship. You shoot whatever the FC tells you to. You follow instructions. You won't get kicked out of fleet. You get on some sick kill mails. And all the profit is for the FC or his support team, people who are running more than just an F1 ship, because they're the ones really putting in the work to make the kills happen.
So the scouts, the bumpers, etc., the looters.
People like me running 20 DPS and 4 support accounts, yeah, I get a fair share too.
All right.
Well, cool. There's a question in chat. Do we know when Burn Jita is going to...
Last I heard, apparently it's canceled because of me, so I don't know. It's normally quarter one, quarter two, so it's got to be soon. But I'm no longer a part of Goons. I'm no longer a part of Mini Love, so I don't have... I'm not privy to that information anymore. I got kicked out for shooting some jump freighters in Ian Orista that they might not have appreciated me shooting.
So you got kicked from a ganking organization for ganking a freighter.
Yeah, if you want to talk about the most hated people in EVE, I've got so many things going for me. You know, I'm the high-sec ganker. I'm in Code.doit. I was Mini Love, and I even got kicked and blacklisted by Goons. You know, I don't know. I've been banned 3 times wrongfully, by the way, from CCP. I don't know what else I can do. I don't know if there's any other list I can get on there, but I'm sure certainly ticking them off as I go.
I can.
Code really does get the raw end of the stick, and I mean most of it's deserved, to be honest. You know, ganking like the poor little guys and the poor little freighters and this and that, but it is kind of funny when you think about, you know, and like when I was talking to you, you know, because you're like a normal guy, you know, and that's what like I always had this image, you know, of these like crazy, freaky, you know, sociopaths that, you know, but no, you're just like a normal guy that does this. So I think it's hilarious to see like a normal guy that plays the game that gets all this hate. I think it's personally, I mean, I'm not getting all the hate, so I think it's funny, but yeah, I feel you, man.
Yeah, that was one of my bans, was just people don't understand what I'm doing. And apparently there was so many reports, the way the GM put it was that like the amount of reports that were presented to them on me, like nothing else, it made everything else like nothing. You know, I was basically their number one. Everything else pales to compare, or whatever the phrase is. So I legitimately just got banned because there were too many reports on me, not at all because the GMs went and looked into me or what I was doing. And eventually they reversed the ban and let me go after they saw exactly what I was doing. And I think that's also another thing that people don't really understand about gankers in general, but especially about me. There really isn't any manipulation of the game mechanics. It's all stuff that is very well known, and you could learn about it if you took, you know, the time to go and learn about it and how to pilot your freighter safely or whatever else you want to fly through Udama. And I might be multiboxing 24 accounts, but I stream it all the time. I'm doing it. It's pure vanilla Eve clients. There's not even the Eve preview or IS boxer. There's none of that. It's legitimately just me destroying my CPU as much as I possibly can. And there's nothing there really helping me do it. It's all just me.
If anybody wanted to tune into one of those Twitch streams, where could they find you?
My Twitch is Jason Kujan. I don't remember exactly how it works, if there's an underscore in there or not. But I think you've got the link if you put that in the chat forum.
It'll also be linked in the show notes for our podcast listeners. But I'd say, unless anybody else has any final comments, last questions, Ron, Silver? This is a fun episode. That was a lot of
really fantastic. Has, yes. I hope at least Ron over there has a little bit more appreciation for ganking as a legit gameplay mechanic.
Well, yeah, definitely.
I've stared at the devil in his eyes, and I like him. I like him, but still the devil.
Well, I was promised that Ron was going to come at me, and I haven't that side yet. But definitely thank you guys for having me on and, you know, taking interest in this part of the game that really doesn't get quite as much coverage. Other than the big kill mails popping up on Zkill every once in a while. So thank you for that.
I mean, full disclosure, next on our list of guests to get is the anti-ganking community. So there is in addition to the community surrounding ganking, there's also a community surrounding trying to stop you from ganking. So the people who will set up with griffins on gates or set up with anti-bumping bumpers, things like that. So we're trying to get in contact with them to go through all the ways to avoid giving you content. So just be on the lookout for that in the future. But we're going to round out today with some shout outs. First of all, Jason, you got a shout out for us?
Really, my biggest shout outs are probably going to be to Warakini and Bony Chip Tooth Tompkins, whatever his name is. It's terrible to pronounce. But they were really the ones that got me going in ganking, and they were the ones that first funded me bringing up my accounts when I first started trying to multibox. You know, there was a progression there from 1 to 24. It didn't happen overnight, and they were there to support me esque-wise when I didn't have it. And then, of course, our Lord and Savior of high sec, James315 himself. The man is a legend, and he truly deserves everyone's respect, and you should go out and buy.
No. No.
Alright, Ron, you got a shout-out?
I have a shout out to Perimeter Police Department and the whole HiSec thing. You know, they a fight a few days ago, and it was a great fight, and good job, boys.
Silver?
All of the poor little freighter pilots out there, you know, I hope they tune into the episode, get a little appreciation for their attacker, maybe learn a few things about how to avoid him, and good luck with Brangita.
All right, and I'm going to give one final shout out to my now old corporation, Capitalist Army, member of the Network Dot Alliance. I left. I've joined Pandemic Horde now. But one final shout out to those guys. They're still a great group of guys. Honestly, I'd still be flying with them, but there's just too much stuff that they were doing that was interesting, and I need to, like, check out and make a lot of ISK right now. So, have fun, guys. I'll be back later, probably. But right now, we're in Horde. We're going to have some fun with some new bros. So, that'll do it. What?
I didn't know that. Okay.
Don't worry, Ron. Your corpse is on my list of things to collect in Perimeter. So you're.
Is that why you put me and Ron on the bottom windows? is that some sort of boundary line you're drawing there now, Mr. Enemy?
Maybe.
The food chain.
It's gonna get interesting in backstage later.
Alright, that'll do it for this week's episode, Season 1, Episode 15 of Talking in Stations, the Midweek Update. We'll see you next week. We'll also have a show this Sunday. I don't know what it's going to be about, but it'll certainly be interesting. See you then.